Hello, my magical friends. My name's Ayumi. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and you're listening to Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Whether it's your first or 168th time listening, we welcome you to our space to celebrate magical girls from every corner of the world. We have a little bit of news, and I've watched a little bit of stuff, and then we'll get to today's topic. So let's get started. So first, just a small thing, but for anyone who wanted to watch the most recent Ladybug and Cat Noir movie but didn't have access due to it being on Netflix, the movie has now been put up on YouTube for free officially, so you can go check that out on the official Ladybug page. I'll put a link in the show notes for that. But in terms of actual big news, we have one which is a new story set within the Magia Record smartphone game for Madoka Magica. This was announced during Magia Day, which is every September 24th. This story is going to just simply be called Madoka Magica Scene Zero. So this is a story set before the events of the original series from 2011. But that's all for news this week, so we can move on to what I've been watching, which, of course, is Soaring Sky Precure. Last episode was definitely an iconic one. I believe it was at the beginning of September, yes, that we had heard from getting the episode titles from, you know, official sources, etc., that, you know, a certain someone was coming back, and a lot of people were unsure about how this was going to go, especially in an episode focused on Mashiro, but it was really, really, really good. Just incredibly funny and just very, very silly. There was a lot of like really interesting adventurous stuff they were doing with the animation style this episode. And yeah, I think we are really enjoying seeing the kind of new dynamics of the villains as they get reformed and reformed in a kind of unique, gradual way for this season. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. But that is all I have watched, not for the podcast, so let's go on to today's topic. So, yes, I'm really so excited about today's topic because it is legitimately one of my favorite Magical Girl series of all time. So we are going to talk about the first half of Powerpuff Girls Z today, Powerpuff Girls Z to most American English speakers. And this series is very, very near and dear to my heart. I could honestly talk about it for hours upon hours. So of course this is a magical girl reboot, a kind of more traditional magical fighting heroine reboot of the superhero show The Powerpuff Girls from the US, but this is a Japanese series, so it's a really interesting thing, and we definitely get into all those unique aspects. Because of the incredibly episodic nature of this particular show, and the fact that it is cut up into episodes that are actually half size compared to our usual fodder, we took the time to delve into the series, kind of more going into comparisons and delving into specific characters and how they appear throughout the show compared to trying to do like more gradual chronological episode by episode type things. And honestly, I think that a lot more shows should be in this format. I should specifically mention Japanese shows because a lot of shows from other countries do have this shorter format of an episode being 15 minutes. So for today, I had on a guest who has been wanting to come on for a while. Bia is a Brazilian fan fiction enthusiast, I should say, and just a general magical girl nerd. And yeah, we had fun getting into lots of different things about the series. Now, again, we are only talking about the first half for this episode, so we aren't going to really do anything that's like major spoilers for the entire series. All the kind of actual spoilery stuff of this show kind of is in the the second half of the series, which we'll get to at another time with another guest. But I definitely was, definitely had a good time, even just with the first half, talking about this series. And yeah, Pia was fun to have on. So usually we would put some warnings at the top of the show. I think the only thing I can really think of is we do discuss a little bit about animal cruelty, as well as racial and homophobic stereotypes. So you can keep those in mind as we get into the chat. It's a, you know, minor thing, but they are there. And then we also talk a little bit about the sexualization of minors, which is unfortunately kind of par for the course for a lot of shows. So there you go. But yeah, so with that, I think it's time. So let's sit back and relax and enjoy today's episode about Powerpuff Girls Z with Bia. So we are here today to talk about the first half of Demashita, Powerpuff Girls Z, or Powerpuff Girls Z from 2006. And I'm very delighted for our new guest today. Can you please introduce yourself?
Gladly. My name's Beatrice, but you can call me Bia, B-I-A, pronouns she, her. And I'm a general magical girl enthusiast. I write fan fiction. I draw fan art. I'm also taking acting classes because I want to be a voice actor. I'm dabbling in every field in a way.
Awesome. So we'll get more into that now, actually. So can you tell us a bit more about your history with the magical girl genre, how you got into it and all that?
Oh, of course. So I was born in 96, so I grew up in the early 2000s, and I'm from Brazil, so at the time, I grew up watching a lot of like those classic children's TV networks like Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, the sort. And on Cartoon Network at the time, they were bringing in a lot of anime series into their programming, including some big ones that used to air on this local TV network we had called Rede Manchete. One of those big anime series was Sailor Moon, and of course I was huge into Sailor Moon, and I also watched Cardcaptor Sakura and Winx Club and the 4Kids dub of Tokyo Mew Mew that they aired there. Oh my god, I can't believe I actually grew up with that. Yeah, I've been exposed to magical girl media from a very young age, of course, and I've also watched other anime series like on channels such as Fox Kids, later Jetix, and then Locomotion, later Animax. But as far as Magical Girl series specifically were concerned, it was primarily Cartoon Network for me.
Cool. So what were some other shows that you got to watch, I guess, after that point?
Oh, well, those are mostly shows that were introduced to me from the internet. Mm-hmm. And most of them never made it to Brazil, so I just kept up with them for the internet, like Shugokiara, Ojamajo Doremi, of course, Pretty Cure. I've been watching Pretty Cure since 2008, and I haven't looked back since. And of course, the PPGZ anime that I was actually keeping up with the Powerpuff Girls Z anime long before it started airing in Brazil.
Oh, okay. So, that's actually really interesting. So what was the Brazilian airing like? Was it like a dub, and did it cover the whole show?
I remember that they based the Brazilian dub off of the official English dub. I think you're going to bring that up later, but I remember not being too pleased with the Brazilian dub because of that, because like, obviously, they made a lot of changes to the dialogue. They didn't do the whole giving the girls a different name in civilian form. So they obviously had to dance around that a little bit. Like, oh, they had to call Blossom when she was transformed the Red Powerpuff, which makes no sense because she's obviously wearing pink. But yeah, I didn't really like the dub. I didn't really like the Brazilian dub. I'm much more partial to the original Japanese version. Although, I will give them huge credit for bringing back the voice actors from the original Brazilian dub of the Powerpuff Girls into this new show, because it's so fun hearing Yara Hisa do like a completely different version of Blossom from the one she's used to. May she rest in peace, Yara Hisa.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And yeah, we can talk a bit more about the dub. So just for anyone who's listening and is not familiar with this show, this is a reimagining of The Powerpuff Girls, the American-made cartoon by Craig McCracken, which was like a huge hit also in Japan. Like even now, it's everywhere. like you just kind of just see the characters everywhere.
Like, they keep bringing it back. They got the animated reboot, and I think they have another reboot in the works. Like, don't they have any other shows? Like, I get that Powerpuff Girls is a huge hit, but they don't have to keep bringing it back over and over and over. Like, give it a break.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting topic just because Craig McCracken himself has talked pretty openly about the fact that he has pitched so many original ideas for shows that have been turned down because people just want him to keep doing Powerpuff Girls stuff.
That seems to be a bit of an epidemic in Hollywood. Like, people aren't, like, the big studios, they're not interested in original ideas anymore. They just keep cranking out remakes and reboots and reimaginings and adaptations and the work. And, like, I am a huge adaptation aficionada. I love seeing different spins of classic stories and how they compare to the original versions. This is also very much the case with Power Rangers in comparison to Super Sentai. And of course, this was Disney's bread and butter for many, many years. So it's always fun to see how much certain versions differ. But it's getting a little out of hand nowadays. It's getting a little out of hand.
maybe. I mean, I was one of the few people that was actually interested in what the live-action Powerpuff Girls might have brought us, but I understand being tired of it, and, like, the new stuff isn't really in Japan, but it's, like, all merchandising. There's so much of it here. But in any case, you know, this was in 2006. It was, like, during the major boom of Magical Girls. So, like, 2005 was the year that we had the most original Magical Girl series, and so it just kind of made sense that they would keep going and try to find new ideas, and they're like, what if we take this idea, this Powerpuff Girl thing, and make it more like heroines that we know here in Japan? And so they took the model and they made, you can also see, like, online everywhere, like, there's so much amazing concept art of them, like, reworking the idea of Powerpuff Girls into this kind of Magical Girl series.
Yeah, when you think about it, it makes perfect sense to, like, take this idea of, like, of a show that was intended for little girls, a superhero show for little girls, and turning into a Magical Girl show. Like, it fits well. It makes sense. Which is weird, because a lot of people, when the show was announced, thought it was an April Fool's joke. Apparently, they thought it was so ridiculous that it could only be an April Fool's joke, which, it's really not that ridiculous. Like, it actually makes sense.
Yeah, I remember when it came out, and, like, even the announcements and stuff, I was, you know, very eagerly watching at the time, along with a lot of other Magical Girl shows. And, yeah, I lost my mind, because I was a huge Powerpuff Girls fan, like, growing up, for sure. And so, to hear that they were taking one of my favorite shows of all time and turning it into something that was more aligned with my favorite genre of fiction, I was just, yeah, incredibly elated. It felt like a fever dream in a lot of ways, and, like, looking back, it's like, I still think this is one of my favorite Magical Girl shows of all time, honestly. With, like, the way that they are able to kind of change up the characters to be different, but, like, not so different. Like, they still make sense for how they were written, and kind of seeing these reimaginings of classic characters and also, like, new characters, and seeing what tropes they kept and things. It's just so much fun. Yeah, I think that they really did a lot to, like, kind of, I don't want to say something like elevate, because I really do still love the original Powerpuff Girls a lot, but it was just something that, like, really felt like you could tell that they cared about the original show.
They took what was great about the original Powerpuff Girls and elevated it.
Yeah, I just really, getting to watch it at the time and revisiting it was just like, oh yeah, I love this so much. And another thing that was interesting about revisiting it is, like, I really do feel very strongly that this is the magical girl show that can be tied back to Panty and Stocking, which might sound obvious by the art style.
Exactly. And I was going to point, I was going to point exactly that out. Like, a lot of people compare the Panty and Stocking art style to the Powerpuff Girls, even though it's not exactly the case. Like, you can definitely see it, especially in the character's eyes, but it's just a general, westernized look that they gave the show.
Yeah, yeah. But beyond that, I feel like that is a service level comparison that can be easily made. But I think from my rewatch, what I really felt more was that there were like actual story beats and even entire like story plot lines that felt very similar to things that happened in Panty and Stocking. So it just felt very much like someone on staff, like at least one of the writers, was looking back to this show for inspiration in that regard. In any case, so what we get is, instead of the classic Powerpuff Girls story of three girls created by mixing sugar, spice, everything nice, and Chemical X, we meet Professor Utonium and his son Ken, who is this boy genius. They live in their old laboratory, of course. Ken's mother is nowhere to be found, but we do get to meet her later. And in the flashback that we get, which is actually in the kind of second half of the first episode, where the way that those episodes are structured are actually two short episodes, which is also really interesting.
Yeah, that's such a cool concept. Obviously, they brought this over from the American show. I really wish more anime series did that because it's such an interesting format.
Yeah, the storytelling possibilities are definitely very different in that regard. I would say that there are some shows that do use that. They're usually other shows for younger, much younger kids. But yeah, I think it's really interesting to see in this particular case, like, you could easily split up episodes if you need to have like a 15-minute time slot for some reason. The first episode just brings us right into the world, and then we get into the origin story, wherein Professor Utonium and Ken are in their lab. They're working, and Ken is getting some food for them to eat, including some mochi. Ken has a robot dog named Peach, who is super adorable, and Peach accidentally...
About the dog. It's interesting because in the original show, they didn't really have, like, an animal mascot figure. Like, the closest thing they had was the talking dog that showed up every now and then, like, oh boy, I'm a talking dog in the middle of a big city. I sure hope no disasters befall me. And then the monsters attack or something. So the talking dog was mainly there as, like, a bit of a recurring joke character. So they basically had a dog that was a more important character and, like, the series mascot character. I think they're supposed to be equivalent, but I never really saw it that way.
That could be an argument that's made, but I'm not sure about that exactly. But yes, in any case, so at the moment, Peach is not a talking dog, but after some series of events and the sudden, like, mass disaster that's going around the world that the mayor of Tokyo City, or Mayor, calls on Professor Utonium to help with, they take out, as a last-minute resort, this huge tank of Chemical X, which we all know and love. But Peach accidentally knocks over some mochi into the Chemical X.
And it turns it into Chemical V.
Yes. So we get a whole new compound, and so this is, you know, shown to be very powerful. So Ken, who's just very overeager to hurry up and solve the mass crisis, it's like this like mass climate crisis. It doesn't make any sense, but it's just to get the story moving, so it's fine. So he shoots this out into the sky, and we see these beams of both white light and black light. And in the case of the white light, it hits three different girls as they're trying to protect people who are almost in the way of that light.
Specifically, they're trying to protect little kids who are playing with their toys, and when they're hit by the white light, in most shows there's some kind of setup. Here they just go straight into the transformation sequences and leave the girls to their own advances. And a really interesting thing that they did, they were saving these little kids, and each of them was playing with a different toy, and the toys that those kids were playing with became the weapons of the girls. So, like, Momoko, who's Blossom, she saves a kid who's playing with a yo-yo, and she gets a yo-yo as her weapon.
Yeah, our three characters are Momoko, Miyako, and Kaoru. So Miyako is protecting a child who is blowing bubbles, and she becomes rolling bubbles. And Kaoru is protects this boy and becomes Powered Buttercup. We should also mention, yes, for Blossom, she's Hyper Blossom. So their names are a little bit different, but basically the same. but yeah, they're three, you know, junior high school students. So the classic fare for this kind of series. But there is this idea of them being the result of accidental experimental science. Now, we mentioned there were some black lights that come out of the sky as a result of this chemicals that...
And the black lights end up producing the bad guys. Like, throughout the show, we get to see all sorts of different bad guys, both adapted and all new, coming from these black lights. And in the first episode, the first bad guy we see is obviously Mojo Jojo, because he's the most iconic Powerpuff Girls villain. And right off the bat, there's this kind of rivalry between him and Blossom, because in this version, Blossom is a huge superhero anime tokusatsu nerd, and she can clearly see that there's an evil aura around Mojo Jojo.
Yes. So, like, throughout the show, what we do is we kind of get, like, this flashback of when the black light hits a particular character, and then we see them, basically the story of them becoming that villain for the first time. For most cases, there are some, like, small exceptions, but basically it's, you know, it's very much like this interesting kind of formulaic thing where the idea is that, like, at the same time as these heroes are made, these villains are also made. They don't all manifest at the same time, though. So that's kind of how the story moves along.
Yeah, but, like, the whole thing of heroes and villains coming from the same power source, it kind of mirrors the original show in a way, in that Mojo Jojo was the one who was responsible for the Powerpuff Girls' birth. Like, he was Professor Antonio's lab-assisted monkey, and he was going bonkers in the middle of the lab while the professor was making his concoction, and he knocks the professor over and breaks the chemical axe container and spills it all over the concoction, and the rest is history.
Yes. They kind of really show this classic monsters of versus heroes situation. And you get monsters who we all know and love if you've watched the Powerpuff Girls. And then we also have a few various recurring characters who are monsters that are completely original to this iteration. So, yeah, Mojo Jojo is basically more or less the same as you might remember him. He was a monkey at a zoo, and so a lot of his kind of dealings are his frustration with humanity, which is understandable. and I think that it was really interesting to see him as the kind of most recurring character throughout the first half of the show. He's, like, the most likely to come back if they need to beat up someone real quick, because, you know, much like with any other Magical Girl series, we kind of still need to have that action all the time, but there are a lot of problems of the day and things that are completely unrelated. He's a really fun and interesting kind of recurring character that sometimes they even go so far as to actually relate to. Like, for example, there's an episode where early on where he finds this guy who had been responsible for taunting him when he was still a zoo monkey with food. And it turns out, like, he, like, owned a shop. And so he is, like, going to destroy the shop. And it's like, well, he's kind of right, though. so they were able to kind of understand his feelings there. But, of course, he would go too far. And that's when the fighting would commence. So there are a lot of different things that Mojo Jojo does. For example, when we first meet him, he is introduced to us kidnapping a whole class of kindergartners in the first episode. Also, he does other things such as hugging all the food in a restaurant and not letting anyone else enjoy it, turning people into monkeys for revenge, very fair, trying to claim a building for his own because he realizes his own hideout is no good, trying to become the mayor of a city, and other such silliness.
Yeah, there's another episode later on. Like, this one is in the second half, but it's not a big spoiler. They develop this bit of a friendship while he's still disguised, and they essentially help each other get through their appointments.
Yeah. He's a fun recurring character. He also has his own robot, of course. And he's also, once again, just like in the original show, responsible for creating the Rowdy Rough Boys, which we can talk about later. But then the kind of next major recurring character is Princess. Princess in the original series is Princess Morbux. In this series, she is Himeko Shirogane. So very much named and coded as a rich girl as she already was.
She basically fills the same role here as she did in the original, except that she has a little bit of that Ojo-sama thing going on with her.
Hmm. Yeah, and so she is struck by the black light, specifically while she is holding her cat. And when she holds her cat, she's like grabbing the cat's tail, Sapphire, and what happens is, like, it causes her cat to scream, of course. And so, basically, now every time her cat screams, she is triggered into transforming into Princess. Her character of Princess is a bit more different. I think her regular style looks a bit more like Princess Morbux to me, but it's kind of like a blend. But in any case, yeah, so she generally is, of course, very jealous of the Powerpuff Girls and is trying to, you know, get one up on them and also trying to make everyone like her because she's also generally jealous of the Powerpuff Girls even in her regular life because she wants to be the center of attention.
She's also jealous of her big sister. She has a big sister in this version and she's all, and like this big sister, Miko, is all pretty and perfect.
Yes, yes. So
it's basically a lot like what Erika from Hard Cash Pretty Cure goes through, except painted in a more villainous light.
Sure. Yeah, there's an episode wherein basically the girls are seeing that every single night Princess is attacking, and so it's causing the Powerpuff Girls themselves to lose sleep. And so they're trying to figure out, like, why this keeps happening, and they're able to pinpoint, because they know the identity of Princess, like, pretty much right away. Usually what was happening in the beginning of the story is they would find the monsters and then take them to Professor Utonium, who would then shoot them with a beam to remove that negative energy. But in the case of Himeko, they couldn't completely transform her back because she would just keep getting, basically just keep becoming Princess every time her cat screamed, which is unfortunate. But in this episode, they were able to pinpoint the source of her frustration being her sister. She kept seeing something, like, kept getting overshadowed by her sister for one reason or another. And they found that, like, every night, whatever Princess was doing was reflected of whatever aspect of her sister she was jealous of that night. But yeah. So next one is also pretty interesting, which is Sedusa. So Sedusa is another, like, very classic character. I really was very fascinated by how they transform Sedusa as a concept, because I do find that she is quite different in a lot of ways in this version of her.
Yeah, in the original version, she's just hot lady villain with attacking hair. I forget the word. But in Powerpuff Girls Z, they changed it. She's the alter ego of a girl named Sakurako, who's super shy and meek and likes this boy, but doesn't think she's sexy enough for him. So when she puts on makeup, she becomes Sedusa after being hit by the black lights, of course. And it's really funny what they did with this in the dub, because apparently there's one episode where she sees the boy she likes with another girl, and in the dub, she's like, I can't believe he'd rather be friends with that girl than me! Like, what?
Hmm.
That's so confusing.
That's interesting. Yeah, so basically, like, her first episode is her, yeah, like, kind of dealing with her jealousy, in particular because she is under the impression that Miss Bellum is the reason why this guy keeps showing up to her shop, because Miss Bellum is in the show, of course. She is the assistant to the mayor, and she is, just like in the previous version, she is considered like a sex symbol. So Sakurako is very, like, jealous of that idea, and she ends up holding a lipstick when she's hit by the black light. It's actually Miss Pelham's lipstick because she had dropped her purse. But that result was, like, her becoming this, I don't want to say hypersexual, but, like, hypersexualized character, which is, like, a really interesting concept of, like, being, like, the kind of darkest version of this fear. And when she is Sedusa, she uses makeup to transform herself in disguises and so on, and is able to rob banks. And it's like, she doesn't really need to be doing any of that stuff, but she's having fun as a villain, of course. And it's interesting because that ability is then used when the girls are able to tell, like, oh, this character, like, in particular, like, Buttercup doesn't wear makeup. Why does she smell like makeup? Oh, it's her, it's Sedusa. Yeah.
You know, now that she pointed out that the lipstick she uses to transform is Miss Bellum's lipstick, I wonder what it would have been like if at any point in the show Miss Bellum got that lipstick back and applied it herself and became like her own version of Sedusa. I know there's an episode where Sedusa switches places with Miss Bellum.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It is very, very different because this Sedusa is still a teenager, right? Sakurako's a teenager, so.
I think she's like a young adult because I'm pretty sure she actually owns a business.
Oh no, she just runs the business. Her canonical age is 15.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, so she's still, you know, she's just a little bit older than the other girls. I think that's why they're also so able to chat with her and stuff.
Yeah, this reminds me. This show has that traditional 2000s weirdness that, you know how a lot of magical girl shows for children are a little bit too... Yeah, they basically have this teenage girl wanting to be sexy and transforming into an adult woman with massive, massive boobs. Like, isn't that sort of uncomfortable when you think about it?
You know, I didn't read it that way because, like, for me, I didn't see it that way because it felt like commentary. It didn't feel like you were supposed to be like, ooh, ah, like, Sedusa's so hot. Like, it's more like she is this kind of... Yeah, she just, like, this exaggeration, you know.
They played up her sex appeal, but it wasn't supposed to be gawked at. Like she's just supposed to be comically sexy.
Because this is still a show for kids, and so they can't, like, go into actual sex appeal. It's just, like,
yes, the kind exactly, of concept of exactly. it. Yeah.
I thought it was exactly. handled well. And again, it's, like, very much feels like this kind of reaction to the idea of what's... You know, honestly, what all teenage girls go through in a way of, like, trying to figure out fighting with the ideals of society. So, yeah. But, yeah, and let's see. Then we have Fuzzy Lumpkins is a very interesting version of himself because he is still himself, like, even after they use the beam on him to remove the monster energy, he still stays exactly the same. When we first meet Fuzzy Lumpkins, he is just a guy who looks exactly the same as he did in the original series and happens to be very invested in making sure that his house is kept to himself in the middle of the woods. So naturally, he gets very angry when other people try to go into the forest to go hiking or picnicking or what have you. And so he decides to use his hand to kind of imprint onto anything that he claims to be his. Unfortunately, this ends up kind of through the power of the black light getting extended to the rest of town. So, of course, he needs to be stopped. And then the second time around in the first half, we see him getting all flustered about Miss Bellum and then deciding that he has to kidnap her, which she is not a fan of. But he seems to be generally mostly driven by his desire for Miss Bellum. A bit of a stalker. Yeah.
You know, Fuzzy, I noticed he mostly stays the same, just adapted for the Japanese audience. But his thing about his crush on Miss Bellum is, like, really cute, actually. Like, obviously they're not going to end up together, but it's a nice bit of, like, it's a nice little something. It's a funny little.
I think it's cute until it isn't. You know, like, you know, kidnapping is not usually the way to go if you want to get someone. But yeah, I understand what you mean. Where, like, it's kind of like not necessarily inherently a bad thing that he, like, likes this woman who's very beautiful as far as we know. Just like in the original Powerpuff Girls, we never see her face, but like she is still like canonically known to be very pretty, so it makes sense that like he would be interested in her. It's just a matter of how they handle it, I guess. I hope that like, you know, he would learn his lesson later on, but there's that. But yeah. And then let's see. They don't have many episodes, but the Amoeba Boys are a very interesting bunch in the way they are very similar but also very different from the original.
Yeah. One of the Amoeba Boys is a girl now. Like, I'm crashing the boys. Wait, that's a boy too? That girl is a boy too, yeah. Something like that. And it's the same thing with the Gangrene Gang. Like, they turn, like, I believe that at least in the English dub, they turn Snake into a girl.
Oh, that's interesting, because Snake is definitely not a girl in Japanese. But I could understand why. We'll talk about that in a sec. But yeah, so the Amoeba Boys, you know, they are the manifestation of the black light hitting literal amoebas, and they are really bad at getting any attention and trying to, you know, they're trying to do evil, but no one takes them seriously. And
they're harmless villains.
Yes, yes, more or less. But there are three of them, and they wear different things. So they are called Silcat, Poncho, and Lady. So there's that. Yeah, like you said, girl amoeba boy.
I was just reminded of this one episode of the Powerpuff, of the original Powerpuff Girls, where the Amoeba Boys in that version, for the most part of the episode, they managed to best the Powerpuff Girls by infecting them because they were amoeba, like they were amoebae, and temporarily rendered them weak. And thinking about it, I'm surprised that the anime versions of the Amoeba Boys never attempted that.
I'm not sure why they would have avoided that, but that's, it's a good point. That is something that happened. yeah. So, let's see. Yeah, so getting back to the Gangrene Gang, like you mentioned. So, there are five of them. They're still, like, a gang. In this case, they are very much like young boys who were all, like, normal boys that were transformed by Blacklight into this gang. And they seem to all already have known each other. Much like in the original, they have green skin, and they act very tough, but every time that the Powerpuff Girls actually fight them, they show themselves to be very easily defeatable. But the fact that Snake was turned into a girl is very interesting to me, because for me, Snake is just...
Yeah, it's a common thing! Mm-hmm. It's a common thing! Like, we've seen it with Zoicide and Sailor Moon, and I think they did it with Fisheye in another Sailor Moon season. Yeah. Like, they have this visibly effeminate male character, and they turn him into a girl.
Yeah, and I don't even think I consider Snake to be that feminine, really. But he does, you know, have, just like the original, he speaks in a very snake-like way, right? And then he's also very, like, not, I don't say like Western coded, but he uses a lot of English. So like his first person pronoun is me, which is very interesting in Japanese. But his whole thing is like he is apparently very good at massages. So that's like how he like gets, you know, he's like weakens the girls, I guess, by like just, you know, making them feel just good, I guess, with the massages. And this, it's a little weird, but for the most part, it's like, yeah, whatever. They all have like different ways to get, you know, try to weaken their opponents, but in the end they are always defeated.
Still on the topic of the Gangrene Gang, I keep thinking back to how a few years ago, Ace, like the Ace from the original Powerpuff Girls, was brought into Gorillaz as the replacement bassist when Murdoch went to jail. I believe that was during the Now era. Like, it's still very fresh in my head. And I wonder if there's like a PPGZ version of Gorillaz. Like, imagine how bonkers that would be. I actually think that would be better suited for Panty and Stocking rather than PPGZ. In fact, I remember in the Panty and Stocking episode that was basically a music video, they had a Gorillaz parody at one point.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting. But in any case, yeah, they're much like the Amoeba Boys, they're not actually very threatening. Like, they're threatening to everyday people, but once the Powerpuff Girls come in, it's like not even like that serious. And they do actually try to pair up with the Amoeba Boys to take down the Proper Girls, and it almost works. It's interesting. And then, so getting to the Rowdy Rough Boys, like I mentioned. So in the original series, Mojo Jojo does create the Rowdy Rough Boys while he's in jail, which is also interesting. So it's also like created with science. But in this case, he sneaks into the lab and gets his hands on some chemical Z, and also gets his hand on DNA from the magical girls, all three of them, through different things that they have in the house that would have their DNA on them. So in Momoko's case, he took a straw, a regular plastic straw, not like the ones that you would usually dispose of, but like one that you would like keep around all the time. He got a Q-tip from Miyako with her earwax on it. And then in Kaoru's case, he got an old sock that hadn't been laundered yet. And so was able to get their DNA that way. And these are all important details because those are all the weapons that the Rowdy Rough Boys end up using when they're created. So we have Brick, Boomer, and Butch. And the other thing that's really interesting about them is, well, other than the fact that they are just as naughty as ever and they refer to Mojo Jojo as Mama.
They're even worse than they were in the original. Like, at least, I remember in the original there was an episode focused on Boomer where he and Bubble switched places. Like, you don't really have that. They're just little pranksters. Like, more on the Rowdy Rough Boys. It's interesting that even in this version, people still ship the Powerpuff Girls and the Rowdy Rough Boys, even though here they're arguably even worse than they were in the original version, because, like, Craig McCracken created these characters specifically to be villains and didn't like it that people ship the two groups so much, to the point that he included that one scene in City of Clips Bill with the teenage Powerpuff Girls being, like, super vapid and getting so distracted by the teenage Rowdy Rough Boys that they end up completely ignoring their duties, like, protecting the city. Like, there's chaos happening around them while they talk to the Rowdy Rough Boys. And yet the fandom still ran with that. They completely missed the point of that scene and embraced it for what they thought it was rather than what it was actually supposed to be.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not shocked that people would chip them. I didn't really ever remember seeing that myself. Mostly because these Rowdy Rough Boys are significantly younger than the Powerpuff Girls in this series.
Exactly! They're supposed to be, like, younger brothers or even, like, they're supposed to be, like, their younger brothers or even their children because they were essentially created from the girls' DNA.
Yeah, I think it's because it's, like, also made from their DNA, which is not the case in the original series. Like, I think it's even more, like, weird to ship them, but in any case. So they cause a lot of trouble, and they are, like, normal pranksters for Japanese boys, I think. But I think parts of it might be a little shocking for non-Japanese audiences.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, like, there are a few scenes in their debut episode, most notably the one where they flip the girls' skirts, and then the other one, where they moon the girls, it's not surprising that those scenes got censored in the dub, because it's kind of problematic. Like, it's typical Japanese prankster boy behavior, but in America, it could get the show in hot water.
I don't know about, like, problematic. I think it's, you know, when you're showing a villain doing this behavior, it's still a villain, so you're presenting it as bad. So I don't think
it's... very true.
I think it's very fun. But yeah, I think that it's interesting that that they chose to go this particular route to keep them a little bit younger and everything. But yeah, so getting into some of the original monsters from this show. So some other original monsters that we get in the series. A camera who was tossed away by the mayor because it's too old gets revenge and creates a black and white world, which is probably a reference to a past Powerpuff Girls episode. And interestingly, is also a plot in a later Magical Girl series, Love Patrina, more or less. We get a monster made of electric waves and even a piano at one point. So there are a lot of options, a lot of inanimate objects. So I guess Michelle is the kind of unique human monster, in a way. Most of them are they only show up for one episode, except for, like, maybe Michelle the hair salon guy, who, like, is a repeated guy.
I was gonna mention him, he's the first one that comes to mind with his whole shtick of charisma. But then there's also Takaaki, who is Miyako's childhood friend. He's Miyako's childhood friend who's a bit ill, like he has a heart condition. And then he's hit by a black light and becomes a werewolf creature. But he still has the heart of Takaaki, and Miyako is able to recognize that. And basically, it doesn't go the way the other monsters go. Like, she's able to recognize that he's still human beneath the surface. Like, he's still human. There's still the Takaaki she knew, and she's able to keep things amicable with him.
Yeah, yeah. And this is actually the episode that I think is very similar to Panty and Stocking, because it is like this romance with a villain kind of situation.
Right. Yeah, like the Panty and Stocking episode where Stocking falls in love with this really ugly ghost. So cute.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, with the episode with Takaaki, it's very, very sweet as well. It's very clear that like they have a bit of a romance because they are childhood friends, and like even though they hadn't seen each other in quite a long time, she hadn't known that he was hospitalized or anything, but it was really interesting to see how they were able to bond and all of that. And it's just like, yeah, very cute little thing. And she gets a move basically from his experience, because he had been very good at this particular move with blowing bubbles inside of bubbles that was called bubble freedom. And so she did the same thing as rolling bubbles, which was very cute.
You know, it's really nice that they gave at least one of the girls like a recurring somewhat romantic arc. And I'm glad it was Bubbles, because Bubbles is actually my favorite of the original Powerpuff Girls. And she's so cute and so wholesome and so pure. And she's just as much in this series, even though her personality has basically been changed from the little sister to this perfect rich girl type. And in either version, she's wholly deserving of love and of companionship. Bubbles must be protected, but also she can protect herself, but also she deserves all the hugs.
Yes, she's quite adorable in this, in both versions, for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my favorite was always, I loved all of them for different reasons, but my favorite was always Buttercup, because she was like the toughest fighter.
Yes, I had a huge crush on Buttercup back when the show was airing. Like, I remember, like, I believe I was like 10, 11, like, so I was right around the same age bracket as the girls, and I had such a huge crush on the PPGZ version of Buttercup. And most recently, I've taken a bit of a liking to Blossom as well. Like, she's such a relatable character. This is what I wanted to talk about for most of this, because, like, one of the things that fascinates me the most about these sorts of adaptations is how they take certain aspects of the original version and repurpose them to fit, and they reframe them through a different cultural lens. So the original Blossom was this dutiful, smart leader type, which is more in line with what American audiences would think as a leader character. But in Japan, they change her to this bubbly, energetic, optimistic, passionate otaku type. And this sort of like energetic main character seems to be very frequent in Japanese superhero media. There's a lot of them, Super Sentai and Precure. There are even some Kamen Riders that are like that. Like, there's a reason the pink archetype is basically bubbly, happy, optimistic. Like the pink main character archetype in most magical girl shows. And it's very much like Momoko is is drastically different from the original, but she's also a capable leader in that she's very clever, very resourceful, very creative, and she's just become all the more relatable here than she was in the original.
Yeah, I love her in this. I mean, in both versions, she's great, but like, in both versions, like, they're very much the character. It's like, oh, I'm the leader. I'm definitely the de facto leader. And in this case, it's always like, she's always like, well, obviously I'm the leader because I know the most about this stuff, right? I know about magical girls. And it's really, really funny because, like, Kaoru, who's, like, just generally questions everything, hates that she got this outfit where she has to wear a skirt now, like, gives her a cold. She's just, like, constantly questioning, like, that's not really enough. I don't know. Like, it's very fun. But yeah, I loved her in this series as well. And she's like very fun and tough, and like, you can see why she's the way she is. And yeah, she's a really good counterpoint to the other two girls, as she was in the original also.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. And Momoko also has this boy crazy part of her, which apparently it was used to be really common in like magical girl anime. Like, you would often see magical girl leads fawning over pretty boys. And I think Pretty Cure just sort of like brought an end to that. Like, Pretty Cure doesn't make romance a main part of their story the same way classic magical girl shows like Sailor Moon do, and they just focus on the friendship between the girls. Powerpuff Girls also does a lot of that, like the main focus is on the free girls, but every now and then we see Momoko fawning over a guy, like, and she never had any luck with guys, and it made me feel so sorry for her, and that's what crossover ships are for. I'm a big crossover shipper myself, and when I come up with a crossover ship and I start seeing how it could work, yeah, I had to put Momoko in a crossover ship because she deserved to have an attractive boyfriend who she could fight on equal standings alongside.
Yeah, that makes sense. Were there actually any other original monsters that stuck out to you in the first half of the show?
I remember this one that was a comedian that was trying to impress a girl but kept getting shooed away by her father because he wasn't serious enough. So when he got hit by the black light, he made everybody cry and it flooded the city with tears.
Hmm.
And the girls figured that they had to fight back with his own jokes to get him to laugh. There's also an episode, also in that first half, I think, basically each of the girls has like a vegetable they don't like eating. And those three kinds of vegetables, they team up because people won't eat them, like Ken won't eat them either. The mayor happily eats them in his vegetable juice, but Ken isn't so willing to do so. So when the vegetables get hit by the black light, they rebel against humanity and they gather up and try to fight a planet for themselves, but then the Powerpuff Girls are able to stop them. They at first target the vegetables they're more comfortable with eating from the free, and eventually they resort to just spilling sauce on all the vegetables to actually eat them.
Yeah, it was a great episode to teach kids how to enjoy vegetables.
Yeah.
I think another episode that like really stood out to me as far as the original ones was the Noodler, who like comes back on everyone now again, but this ramen flower that like got turned into ramen that was so passionate about making the perfect ramen that would please his creator, basically, was just very, very, very fun as like a concept. And then just also had a happy ending because like they couldn't like turn him back into normal ramen. So he was like just fine being a helper to his master in a way, the shopkeeper. So that was really cute. Are there any particular episodes that like were really stuck out to you?
From the first half, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Like when you told me that you were clear to do this episode, I was very much hyper fixated on Powerpuff Girls Z, but now I'm struggling a bit with remembering it. I do remember liking the episode that Remember the Girls' Favorite Foods. I believe that was one of the early episodes. They got put into the same class by the principal, who's the little brother of the mayor, and they had lunch together and bonded over their favorite foods because Mojo attacked and they couldn't eat.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically what ultimately brought them together as a unit, because up to that point, Kaoru hadn't been so willing to work with the other two.
Yeah, it was very, very cute. Yeah.
Oh, I'm also seeing here, I just remember the episode where the girls have this classmate who keeps trying to get pictures of the Powerpuff Girls, but he can't because they're always so far away.
Yes.
And the girls try to help him get the picture, and Mojo intervenes.
Yeah, that was very fun. Yeah, I think those kind of stories are pretty classic in a lot of ways. But yeah, it's really interesting to see like how the characters around them do interact, because we do get to meet a few of their classmates as well and all of that. But for the most part, they are together. And we do need to mention, like, the whole system, because there's also a great episode with Miss Keen, because she is their main teacher, where basically every time they get the call from their belts that they have to go transform somewhere and go fight, they have to make up an excuse. And so they're always, like, it's always very ridiculous and doesn't make any sense. But the teachers are like, okay, well, go to the nurse's office. But in Miss Keen's case, she's trying to be a good teacher and notices that they're gone all the time. So she tries to, like, do whatever it takes to make sure that they don't have to leave, which is, of course, a problem, because they do need to leave, but they can't tell her why. And that was a very, very sweet episode, I thought.
The running gag with the excuses to get out of class is always super funny. Like, oh, I have diarrhea in my foot, and something like that. And seemingly nobody bats an eye until Mrs. Keen starts to get... starts to get concerned.
Yeah, it's very fun and very silly. And it's also like, why can't the teachers know? But in any case, it's fine. yeah. So basically, well, there is a definite cutoff point in episode 22, which is wonderful, or in episode 26, which was delightful. We do get episode 22 is another big one where we see for the first time the kind of ultimate infamous character from the original series. Yes. Him.
H.I.M. His Infernal Majesty. He was basically the most powerful villain in the original show. So it's only natural that he gets to be the most powerful villain in this one too. Mm-hmm. Even though his design is kind of even more ridiculous than it was in the original.
Sure. So in this episode, he kind of wakes up, but he can't quite get out of his little sarcophagus in like this deep, dark place. So he sends out this mummy to collect white energy from the Powerpuff Girls that he needs in order to escape. Basically, the mummy keeps doing stuff, and the Powerpuff Girls think that Mojo Jojo is responsible, but he is not. And it's kind of interesting where they have to deal with the fact that they, like, attacked Mojo Jojo when he didn't do anything wrong, and they have to deal with that guilt, which is interesting and cute. But in any case, the mummy does get the energy from them, which weakens them and makes them unable to actually to attack or defend themselves for a short time. They do, of course, you know, get back to their normal selves by the next episode, but that does give him the possibility of escaping. But then he realizes it's winter, it's cold. This episode came out in November, the end of November. He's like, it's cool, I'm going back inside. I'll come back later. And, so we see on occasion after that point, we do see him shoot out more black light. So it seems like maybe he's got even more power than the rest of them, because he could basically create monsters by creating these little creatures. And there are a few different episodes where, like, random inanimate objects get transformed into monsters from him. And so just in the first half of the series, we don't get a lot of them, but the ones that we get the comedian that we talked about before, the Rakugo comedian, is turned into a monster from him's magic particles, his own black light, as well as a beetle that Ken is training. And let's say we have a flower who is lonely and is trying to cover the whole world in flowers. And then also a very cute episode with Miyako's own pencil and eraser who get turned into monsters. Very cute little monsters. And it's very, it's very fascinating.
While we're on the topic of H.I.M., I have recently returned to the Just Dance fandom, and there's this meme going around the Brazilian part of fandom that's like the Google search engine, and it says Red Devil from the Powerpuff Girls, and the result is the coach from the Disco Inferno map from the most recent game, the 2023 game. Like, look it up. It's exactly like the original H.I.M. Like, he has the same energy, the same red skin.
That's interesting. Yeah. A very fascinating character in a lot of ways. I would say that he is still a bit of a stereotype in the same way that the original one is. So if there's anything, like, problematic about his character, I would say that is... that is that. A lot of the other stuff is, like, kind of toned down, I want to say. For example, the Gangrene Gang has definitely got a lot of, like, anti-Latino stereotypes going on in the original iteration of it. But I think in this version, it's much less so. I don't really see, like, we still have, you know, the character like Arturo and stuff, but I think that is kind of removed a bit. I don't know if it was intentionally removed, but it just like kind of naturally was, because those kind of stereotypes aren't really a thing that would read to a Japanese audience. So yeah, I guess with that, I want to talk about episode 26, our mid-season finale.
Yes, Christmas episode.
Yes. So just before this, we did get a nice episode. In 24, it's very cute, where Ken decides to go back to school. He's already finished with school. He has completed all of his education because he is a boy genius, but he doesn't have any friends. So the girls kind of encourage him to go back to school. So he does go.
He actually ends up in the same class as Momoko's younger sister.
Yes, Kuriko, who's also very cute. So it's a little tough at first for him. You know, he's not getting along with everyone, but he does end up making friends. So that's really good for him. That's like a kind of recurring thing. And so 26 is also an episode about Ken. In particular, Ken being, in general, you know, very, very science-focused boy, right? He doesn't believe in Santa. In particular, because Santa hasn't been able to make his wish come true for the past few years. And the wish had been that he wanted his mother to be able to come home, or he wanted to be able to see his mother. And that's how we
learn. The thing with Ken's mom is that at first you think she's dead, but then when you watch the show, you find out that, no, she's still alive and she's just traveling through space. That's a really creative approach that they took with it.
Yes. So we find out that she is an astronaut, and so that's the reason why she hasn't been able to see them in quite some time. Of course, even the girls themselves were surprised to hear that Ken did have a mom. but basically what happened was Professor Utonium revealed to the girls that the reason why Ken hasn't gotten his present from Santa the past few years isn't because Santa's not real, it's because he personally has neglected to deliver the letters to Santa from Ken. And so, you know, they're making this extra effort to make sure that Santa gets Ken's letter this year. And Santa's like, well, this is a really, really tall order, but I'll do my best. Meanwhile, like, Mojo Jojo decides to kidnap all the Santas, because they're actually like a whole like army of Santas who have to deliver all the things. It's a very, very cute episode in a lot of ways. Also, Mayor Mayor is there. But basically, you know, with the normal kind of fighting evil shenanigans happening with Mojo Jojo, in the end, everything does work out okay, and they're able to connect through to Ken's mother, and thus Ken is able to believe in Santa again. I thought it was a very, very sweet episode, a tearjerker, for sure.
Yeah, really awesome. I wanted to talk about something. I couldn't really find a time and place to talk about it previously during this recording, but one thing that I find really interesting about not having the girls be biologically related and giving them different families is how their families are structured. So Momoko lives with her parents and her annoying little sister. Miyako is an only child who lives with her grandma while her parents are like constantly traveling. And Kaoru has her mom and her wrestler dad and her rambunctious siblings. And it really helps explain who they are as characters, because in the original, they were raised in the exact same house by the exact same man. And when you think about it, the way they were born is really weird, because if you've seen the movie, they were born fully self-aware, fully clothed, already kindergarten age, and capable of English speech. Like, I don't think they're even supposed to grow up. I think they're just permanently like that. Whereas here, each girl has a different upbringing, and it helps explain why they're so different as people. Like, we have these drastically distinct girls who have to work together.
Yeah, upbringing does tend to change or affect people's potential personality, and it definitely is the case here. I do love that they took the time to like create very unique versions of the girls, and yeah, making them, you know, just as relatable. Because like it was super possible that children would watch the show without having ever watched the original Powerpuff Girls, and so it still had to be, it still had to make sense for them, right? But yeah, it's a very good point about the difference in this adaptation. And I love the fact that, like, Professor Utonium is still a dad and that he has Ken. We get, like, you know, some cute stuff with them. They're so sweet. Like, you know, he's not necessarily always the best dad, but he's trying his best, you know.
Yeah, basically that. It just occurred to me that Ken could be, like, a PPGZ version of Dexter from Dexter's Laboratory, because there was a lot of overlap between Powerpuff Girls and Dexter's Laboratory.
Yeah, I mean, in general, there's a lot of, like, natural, you know, when you have things on the same channel or same, under same studios, that stuff is going to happen in terms of, like, at least, if not literal crossovers, or, like, fandom crossovers. But, yeah.
You know, on the topic of, like, networks and stuff, one thing I wanted to bring up here, it was very common back then to have, like, anime adaptations of Western properties, like, not just with PPGZ, but also there was the Stitch anime. I don't know if anybody who listens to this has heard of it, but Disney was apparently going to team up with Toei to make a Hannah Montana anime somewhere around 2010, and there isn't much that is known about this Hannah Montana anime, but I think it could have been really interesting if they played it up like a traditional magical idol show in the vein of Creamy Mommy, so that instead of just being a teenage girl who puts on a wig and becomes a different person, it's a little Japanese girl who is able to transform into an older pop star for some reason. Imagine if they played it up like that. I don't think that's what they were aiming for, but if they took that direction, it would have been so cool. There's so much potential there. Like, it's a shame it got canceled, because much like a lot of other people in the Lost Media community, I'm really curious as to what would have come of it.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been such a fun idea, and it would have really revived that genre of magical girls, because nowadays all magical girl shows that are created are, like, warrior-type shows. And there are so many different types of magical girls. I really don't like seeing them, like, confined to the same formula over and over and over again. Like, it's always nice to have variety.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, well, we do have, like, the Pretty series and stuff, which, as is common with idols in particular, because it's not just about them being magical idols, but, like, idol media for kids always ebbs and flows. So, you know, the Pretty series came and it did really well for 11 years, and now it's barely surviving, yeah.
Aikatsu and the Pretty series aren't necessarily magical girl shows, but they do have these lavish, sparkly transformation sequences, so it's very easy to, like, blur the lines between one genre and the other.
Aikatsu is not a magical girl show, but the Pretty series is. That's my personal stance, but yeah. That popularity for kids is really back and forth, so I think if they want to try the same thing for an older audience, it might be different, and they do also sometimes do that, but I'm sure we'll get to a point again where there are more options, but for now we're doing okay with what we have. Yeah, so let's see, I guess, was there anything else you wanted to say about the first half of Powerpuff Girls Z?
Okay, this is less about the first half specifically and more about the series in general, but the music is so good. It's honestly some of the best Ani songs I've ever heard. Like, that first ending, it's top tier. Not just that, but it's sung by the live-action actress for Mulan. That's pretty freaking incredible. Like, two iconic cartoon female empowerment role models coming together like that.
I think, yeah, the music is fascinating. The music is also another way in which I feel like Pantheon Stocking might have taken inspiration. The general composition is done by this guy Taichi Master, who is still kind of around, but, like, barely. And, like, he never produced again for any animation whatsoever. And it was like, man, what a waste, because it's so good.
I know! Like, the music for Powerpuff Girls Z is so good. There's, like, this obvious techno influence through all the tracks that really helps hide in the fact that this isn't a traditional Magical Girl series, but more of a Magitech inspired, like, it's magic and science coming together. Like, the music is so fun and so catchy, and It sounds like something you'd play at a club, you know? Guitar!
Yeah, and the music for the, in terms of the openings and endings, are also really good, and like every single one are like, oh this is my favorite. I mean, this series single-handedly got me into my favorite rap group of all time, Harukari. Yeah, it's just like a really fun series for that reason also. So yeah, the music is great.
I can't help but imagine like the people who tuned in expecting it to be an April Fool's joke being met with one of the most rockin' Ani songs they've ever heard. Like, the people who listen to Olivia Rodrigo and like her more rocky stuff should definitely check it out.
Yeah, a lot of a lot of fun. And yeah, if you want to talk a bit about like the dubbing, so it did get dubbed into English, though it wasn't released in the US, which is interesting. The English dub only was released in a few other countries like Australia. And that was specifically, I think they used the Boomerang channel, which the US has stronger rules about Boomerang. Like, they're very much like, oh, the shows have to be at least 10 years old. So it didn't matter that it was like based on an older property, but in any case, they did that. Yeah.
We have Boomerang here in Brazil too, but like, we had Boomerang here in Brazil too. Like, it started out with that same premise of like airing older Cartoon Network shows and Hanna-Barbera cartoons and the like. But at some point, they changed it to make it more of a teen-oriented network, while all of the original Boomerang content went to this other network called Tooncast. I don't know if it still exists, but I think I remember the Powerpuff Girls E-dub airing on either the original Cartoon Network or this new Boomerang. And like, obviously, like I mentioned, the Brazilian dub was very much based off the English dub, where they made a lot of changes, they toned down a lot of the potentially risque stuff. And one of the most baffling changes to me was that, like I mentioned, they kept the girls' names the same in both Civilian and Transform, so it got really confusing, had to skirt around that whatever ways they could. But I don't know, I do think it could have, like, just given the girls normal names when they're civilians, like, and so it could make the transition easier. Like, you don't really see a lot of girls nowadays being called Blossom and Bubbles and Buttercup.
Yeah, but I think the reason for that is, like, if I had to guess, it's, like,
familiarity.
Yeah, familiarity, and also, like, it's easier to do that than to try to give them, like, secondary civilian names when the audience already knows them as Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup. So I think I understand.
It would have been too complicated for them to remember, for the target audience to remember.
So I think it's fine. I don't mind that too much. It makes sense. It's, you know, again, like repackaging for the audience it isn't intended for. So I mean, from what I've seen of it, it seems like it was pretty good. So I think the changes are like pretty natural levels of changes. That's my opinion. But yeah, so I guess that is everything we have to talk about here. But oh, yeah.
It was such a pleasure to be here. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And if anybody else wants to follow me on social media, I'm Marine Dynamite on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm Special Caller for Shaban on Tumblr. And I'm also Marine Dynamite on AO3, where I post a lot of fan fiction. Like I said, I'm working on Power Rangers fanfic and a novelization of the story mode of the new Just Dance game. And I also have a DeviantArt account that I haven't really updated as much. It's DinoKoiko002. Like, there's a lot of old art there that I'm not proud of, but also fairly recent art. Nowadays, I tend to upload my art more on Tumblr and Twitter and Instagram, rather than DeviantArt. But yeah, I guess that's all. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, well, actually, before we go, we do have one last question, which is, do you have a magical persona for yourself? Have you ever imagined yourself as a magical girl?
For Powerpuff Girls Z specifically, no, because it's super tricky to come up with a Powerpuff Girls OC, mainly because of the naming convention. Like, her name has to start with a B and have a double consonant in the middle, and also be something something that you can find in nature, like is the case with Blossom and Bubbles and Buttercup and Bunny, who is their other sister from the original show, who is an absolute A-cab icon. And overall, it's just something that's really tricky. But I have come up with different magical girl personas for myself. I used to have one back in the day called Cure Heron. Like, obviously, like, most of them are pretty cure sonas. Like, I had Cure Heron back in the day. I even cosplayed as her for, like, a pop culture convention that we had where I lived back then. And nowadays, I'm trying to come up with other pretty cure sonas for, like, season-specific pretty cure sonas. And I also have a more updated pretty cure sona that's more based off my personal interests. And her name is Cure Calypso, and she's kind of like water-themed, like ocean-themed. Because my all-time favorite pretty cure is Cure Marine, so I try to hearken a lot to that, but also include elements from other seasons in her design and, like, a lot of colors that I like. But overall, not really a persona kind of girl. I like, when I create OCs, they're generally just entirely separate characters, or in most cases I just tend to like create offsprings to couples I like. So yeah, that's where I stand when it comes to like creating OCs.
Awesome. Great. Well, I was gonna ask for your social media stuff, but you've already given that to us, so in that case, I will put a link to all that stuff in the show notes. And yeah, thank you again for coming on, and I hope you have a good rest of the day. Whether this was your first or last time listening, thank you so much for checking out this episode of Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. We hope you check out the rest of our chats, over 2 years of magical content and counting. And if you like what you heard, tell a friend, or tell 5 friends, or tell the whole world by talking about us online. If you use social media, don't forget to use the hashtag SparkleSideChats when talking about and sharing the podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at MagicalGirlAyu, spelled A-Y-U, and you can find me at AyuShenos, AyuShenows. You can also email us at sparklesidechats@gmail.com. Did you know we also take recommendations for future guests and topics? Just fill out the form in the show notes. You can even suggest yourself if you're so bold. The very best free way to support the podcast is using your podcast platform to give a rating and review of our little show. This gives the big internet machines the message that they should share it with more people, and I think we all want that, don't we? You can also join the Discord server for this podcast to talk about magical girls 24/7, often chatting directly with me and both previous and upcoming guests of the podcast. The forever link is in the show notes as well as on the socials, so be sure to stop by. Show notes can be found on your podcast platform of choice or at our main landing page at anchor.fm/sparkleside. If you have a few bucks, you can give a one-time donation at ko-fi.com or ko-fi.com/ayushinos. You can also commit to a monthly membership, which grants you access to bonus episodes about magical girls and adjacent content such as movies, comics, and other series that magical girl fans tend to also love. All it takes is $5 a month, but if you want to rank up, that'll give you discounts on art commissions and monthly requests as well. Music credits, as always, are also in the show notes. Original podcast music is by Hazel. You can find her on Twitter at A Few Bruises. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are magical, forever and always. See you next time.